Music from Beloved, God Knows Where You Are. Before that, from Phil Driscoll, Dance With You. We heard from Bart Millard, I Stand Amazed, his take on a great old hymn. 20 and a half minutes now after the hour. It's a Monday, the 1st of July, a new day, a new month, new week. And we're pleased to present Dr. Don Clark from Garden Valley, Texas. Don, a biochemist, member of the Board of Creation Moments. Don, good morning, good morning.
Well, good morning, Jim, and good morning, Dave. Yeah, how are both of you folks?
I'm just as alert as I could be. I'm just at the top of my game today. I'm feeling good.
Well, that's great.
Wow.
I don't know if I'm that alert yet. Well, I haven't had my coffee.
I'm really just trying to persuade myself.
It's brewing.
Well, what was your name again? Jim.
Jim, yeah. See, David is not at the top of his game today. But no,
I'm at the middle of my game. Jim got some new Shaq shorts.
Yeah, it's my new workout outfit that my wife bought me for my birthday. So.
Oh, and I mean, just putting it on makes him feel really much more energetic.
Now, I'm not wearing it at the moment, though, but I'm looking forward to later today when I hit the trail. You know, in my new, and I don't mind saying they're Adidas, because we went to this mall that has shoes, athletic shoes of every imagination and kind, and I had no idea. I just said, you know, it hurts when I run, and they looked at me and said, well, no wonder. Yeah.
And you're not supposed to run in your dress shoes.
Well, that's solved now. See, I have these bright yellow and black running shoes. Now, I asked for walking shoes. But they said, no, you need the high-impact running shoes. And then I have these black shorts that make me look a little bit like Shaq O'Neal. You know, it's like the baggy black basketball shorts. And then a bright, fluorescent yellow shirt. So I'm figuring I can go stand on the trail, not move a muscle, and look fast.
There you go.
Right. No wonder he's at the top of his game.
Yeah.
he's getting ready. Getting ready.
Yeah. Just before those duds are in the closet.
I'll just assume a pose like I'm running at about 20 miles an hour down there, and they'll say, "Oh, did you see that?" And so I'm set for a long time. Oh. Don's here to talk about something else, though. Don, you forwarded us a video, and we can get a link up to it a little bit later on. But it's called Ultimate Proof from Dr. Jason Lyle on the origins of the universe. And he's talking kind of about the two worldviews that look at the same evidence and conclude different things, isn't he?
Oh, very much so. And he does a great job of pointing out some inconsistencies in atheist arguments and in evolutionist arguments, you know, in particular. For example, just the fact that we can look at things logically presupposes that there is a God who is logical, and that the order and in the things that we look around us and see around us, you know, like the stars and the moon and the sun and the plants and even us, you know, that we are that we can be investigated, and things aren't random; they're actually in order. So, in order to do any type of investigation whatsoever, you must presuppose that things are in order and you can investigate it. Otherwise, you can't do any type of investigation whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. And I guess our opinions are formed, in his view, by our worldview. This all makes great good sense to me. And we've talked about this before, but how the human beings can look at the same evidence and interpret it two different ways. And which way you choose depends upon your worldview, but I think more than that depends also on your motivation in this. And I note in this this video, there's a lot of blog commentary afterwards, just people who have seen the video, and they start arguments with each other. And there's some real viciousness there. There's some hate and some anger being expressed. And most of that seems to be directed against people who have adopted the Christian worldview. Is that my imagination, or is that the way you see it?
Oh, against the people who, yes.
Yeah.
The anger is coming from, you know, the evolutionists or those who believe in the evolutionary theory, or the atheists. They're coming from that side. It's not coming from primarily, you know, from the Christian side. You know, we try to argue things in a logical manner, you know, present things with a decent decent tone in our voice or in our writing and things.
Well, I'm looking looking at one comment here from apparently someone with a Christian point of view. He's talking about the truth, right and wrong being external to man, and the response is, "Your lack of grammar disturbs me." Had no comment on his ideas at all, and not to throw stones, but C.S. Lewis dealt with this, and I can only paraphrase him here. I don't have his quote in front of me, but he was asked one time how he could believe in Christianity, and he said, "I believe in Christianity as I know that the sun has risen today. I saw the sunrise, and by its light, I see everything else." So it's mm-hmm. it's once you have that basic understanding and you see all the other pieces and how they go together, you say, yes, there's truth there.
Right.
It works.
It's logic. if you're honest with yourself, you would actually say, well, you know, gee, there is logic. There is order in the world. Of course, you know, C.S. Lewis could have done a double parody there
mm-hmm.
with the Son of God rising as well as the
I kind of think he had that in mind, actually.
Yeah. And but yes, take for example, you can look at data. We can look at the same data and come to two different conclusions. And one of these examples, for example, like DNA, we talked about a couple of weeks ago. You know, DNA is a very complex molecule. Actually, it's one of the most complex molecules we have in the living cell today, and it contains all of the information. You know, in the cell, it codes for all the proteins, all the enzymes, all the structural proteins. It basically is the the encyclopedia, if you will, or the user's manual, or the
it's kind of like a huge database, isn't it?
It's the database of the cell. It's not only the service manual. It's how the cell is put together, and what components are needed, you know, for the cell to operate. So, you know, us who believe in a God and believe in a God of order would say, wow, that's powerful evidence for a creator. Because the human body, for example, we have over 3 billion base pairs. Those are the compounds that make up the DNA. We have over 3 billion base pairs in our DNA code, in our genome. Which is the total library, if you will, of our cells. And we look at that and we say, wow, what a wonderful creator. Isn't he marvelous and great? And an evolutionist or an atheist would look at that and say, you see, I told you that we came from, you know, monkeys, because we've got similar DNA as monkeys or as pigs or as whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're looking at the same DNA, but we're coming to two different conclusions.
And of course, the Christian argument is that, well, I can see how you can believe that, but isn't it also possible that because there are similarities in these organisms that they came from a common design, meaning designer, you know, rather than related?
Absolutely. Yeah. And a common designer, I mean, you know, we have different makes of automobiles. We have different models of automobiles, but every automobile and vehicle that rides on a road has similar attributes. You know, it's got wheels, usually four, and sometimes some of them have three.
Well, you know, I've got these really fast Adidas running shoes now and a really bright yellow Adidas shirt, and there's the same logo on both of them.
Ah.
See?
So, yeah, I see. So you must be a runner.
Well, so well, if I in the right pose, if you took a picture, you'd say that guy's running. Yeah, but we look at the same evidence, but where does the animosity come from? Is what I'm getting. Why is it an argument of vitriol here? Is it, I don't hear any. I hear Christians being called stupid and gullible. I hear them fighting for their point of view, and some of them get a little off the wall too. I mean, there's plenty of blame to go around here. But it seems to me that those fighting for evolution, rather than looking at the evidence differently and making a rational defense of their position, take an emotional stance. And it's as if they're saying, you guys are stupid because you can't see this.
Right. And that, you wonder where that comes from. And my only, explanation is it obviously comes from the enemy, because the enemy doesn't want us to believe in a creator, doesn't want, wants to fool us that there is no such thing as a God. And I think that's one aspect of that. The other is perhaps the individual is convicted and is not necessarily feeling good about themselves. And so they must take their anger out on their other side. Or
it isn't necessarily anger either, because I think they know that they put man at the top of the food chain and know in their hearts he can't stay there. He doesn't belong there.
Right. And I've run into in some talks that I've given and people that have come up afterwards on the opposite side. I remember one particular elderly man who came up, and he was extremely angry. And his anger, I mean, although at the moment, at that moment it was directed at me, it really wasn't coming, it wasn't about me. It was about my religion. It was about me believing in God. Mm-hmm. And he had been so hurt by the church somewhere in his life that he chose to take it out on anyone who, might believe, that there is a God. So I think there's also some of that going on.
Well, and I can understand that too, because there are enough Christian celebrities out there spouting their own diatribes and publishing their own books and taking their own stances, that it's an embarrassment to some of us who just don't behave like that in public.
Yeah, that's right. I mean,
it makes us reluctant to stick our necks out, because we know we're going to get a cold shoulder, because we're lumped with those people.
Mm-hmm.
Just by the name Christian.
Well, it's true, and unfortunately, you've got crazies and wackos on the other side as well. Mm-hmm. But the media doesn't seem to pick up on that, or other people don't seem to pick up on that. It's like, the Christian has to be perfect in order to live in this world, whereas everybody else gets to be, unperfect, and their bad behavior is explained by, oh, that's just how they are. Mm-hmm. But when we have bad behavior, our bad behavior gets, you say, yeah, I told you this is the way they behave. This is the Christian.
Yeah.
He's a hypocrite. And part of that is indeed, true. We are to act and behave like Christ. If we receive, Christ, we receive the Holy Spirit, we have the power to be able to behave that way. And but the only problem with this is that you have to be in perfect communication with God at all times in order for that to happen. And therein lies the kicker, of course. We are not in perfect communication with God all the time. Some people probably have achieved that, but most of us, aren't there yet. And hence, we are working out our salvation daily.
Yeah, and I want to draw a little bit on your biochemical expertise here, too. At the beginning of this video, Dr. Lyle is talking about DNA and how mutations or changes are assumed by evolutionists to be more complex forms of simpler forms. And yet, he's maintaining that the mutations, the changes, actually show less information, less genetic DNA involved in the mutants than in the originals, which means it's kind of working backward. Did I hear that correctly?
No, you did. And here's the reason. I mean, a mutation, and I think we've talked about this on some program in the past, but a mutation, they've not found any mutation to be beneficial. And one would use, you know, would think after a number of years of looking at various mutations, you would say, well, this isn't going in the right direction. So mutation can't be the answer to how one species, for example, or one kind of animal evolved into another. Some mutations have been found to be neutral, which means that the animal didn't die. Mm-hmm. Some may claim that a mutation is beneficial. For example, there are sheep in Scotland that have short legs, and they've been selectively bred for short legs because they can't jump over the little hedge fence. Mm-hmm. The longer laid sheep can. So it's a benefit. It's not a benefit to the sheep because if there was a wolf or something trying to attack them, they can't run as fast. Mm-hmm. But it's a benefit to the farmer because his sheep aren't jumping over the hedge and he doesn't have to build a high, you know, fence or or a hedge to keep the sheep in. You know, one would say, well, gee, sickle cell anemia is beneficial to those folks who have it, especially if you were in a malaria-ridden area. Because if your cells go sickle, then it kills the malaria. Mm-hmm. But guess what? It also kills the individual. Mm-hmm. So even sickle cell anemia is not a benefit. And these things that folks point to as, you know, beneficial mutations are not beneficial mutations at all. Mm. And this, you know, this is... It has been years and years and years of this discussion. And again, it's what are you trying to prove? I mean, all I'm trying to do is look at the facts and where logically they lead you. Whereas someone will say, well, you know, I was told that mutations is the way that we get from, you know, one species to the next. Mm-hmm. And there's such a thing as natural selection. And I'm not denying that there is such a thing as natural selection. That is, there might be some type of minor modification or...
I mean, like adaptations to specific characteristics of climate, for example, or food
well,
supply.
Even, that kind of thing. Let's, you know, let's just take Darwin's example, the finches on Galapagos. Some finches had long beaks and some finches had short beaks. And the ones with you know, longer beaks or heavier beaks could break the seed that was on the ground and that had you know, dried up. And the shorter beak ones could take the seed that was, you know, in the bushes and in the trees. It so happens that the population will shift depending on how much rain the Galapagos gets. And so if you get, for example, more rain and there's more seeds in the, you know, in the bushes and in the trees, then you get a shift in the population of birds to the you know, the shorter beak type. If there's a drought for a period of time, then the population shifts back over to the birds where that had the finches that had the bigger beaks, mm-hmm. the tougher beaks, if you will. So is that a mutation? I don't think so, because the population is shifting back and forth. The information's already in the genetic, you know, domain, if you will.
But see, there's an example of a body of information, of facts, of observed facts that can be seen two different ways. And I don't know that this is right or wrong, but it's just illustrative of having two different viewpoints. You can say that the birds adapt, and the ones with long beaks produce more birds with short beaks because they can, you know, during rainy periods when the seeds are fresh and on the bushes. Or it works the other way around during drought. Or you can say that because there's a stronger food supply for short-beaked birds, they simply produce more offspring. You know,
exactly.
It's not a DNA change at all.
Yeah, or the offspring, you know, survive.
They prosper. So. The long beaks don't, and vice versa.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a population shifts, and those are, you know, is new genetic information, the real question is new genetic information being generated? And the answer to that question is no.
Yeah, and further evidence, I might, and David, I think you can back me up on this. I think this is still another brick in the wall of another chink in the armor of the theory of devolution from Dr. Don Clark here, don't you think?
We don't need no education. Oh, I'm sorry. You said brick in the wall, and I was singing the song.
So. No. There's okay. No, it's just yeah,
they you know, not to go back in the conversation, but I was just about to jump in on the those deniers, those people who say no, this can't be. This is, you know, this is pure chance, pure happenstance, and you know the. I hate to keep making this about me, but I go through this experience about that we call life, and I can only see it from this viewpoint, and I see the same tendencies and the same arguments and the same kinds of people who get in my face about being a conservative, or who, you know, who rail and battle against. Yeah, and it is the liberal that has no rationale, no logical argument, that is constantly just acting out and doing the same kinds of things and offering these nonsensical reasons that make no sense. And then after their argument and their bluster and their going on and off at the mouth and spewing spittle all over the room, put their hands on their hips and say, "See," and then walk off. It's the same people. It's the same kind of people. And maybe I've discovered something new. I don't think I have. But what is the connection? Why are these people this way? Why are they doing that? Then it's more important to me to know why they're doing it as opposed to, gee, do they have an argument? No, they don't have an
argument. Understanding their ideas. And that's what strikes me about this argument over origins. Is why aren't we both working together to solve the dilemma? You know, looking at the evidence and weighing it rather than casting aspersions here.
Right, and when there is a link, I believe.
Good,
David. Okay. There is a link.
Yes.
And if you have no moral compass, and we're going to talk about morals maybe a little later in the program, mm-hmm. but if you have no moral compass, then you have no problem denigrating your enemy or what you perceive to be your enemy. And, you know, we who have a moral compass, we think, well, this person shouldn't be behaving this way. I'm not behaving that way. I'm trying to be cordial. I'm trying to be polite, and I'm trying to offer up my point of view as a legitimate point of view, rather than looking at the evidence, rather than looking at the logic behind it. The other side often tends to just shout and rant and rave and cast dispersions on the other side. And I think it's because, one, they don't have a moral compass. They don't believe, many of them don't believe in God, or if they do believe in God, it's an ethereal God. It's not necessarily a God that you can actually have a relationship with. And so they have no problems denigrating their enemy and using that. It's been an argument, and it's been a mechanism, if you will, in politics for years and years and years, to denigrate the other side and not to allow them to have to have their own say, because people, if you allow them to have their own say, since many of them have logical arguments, then people might start believing the logic. And so we can't allow that, you know, to happen. This happened last week here in Texas, actually.
Yeah,
really. With the bill that was going through the Senate, the
It's the abortion bill we're talking about.
The abortion bill, which was basically after 2 months, look, this this fetus is, you know, a human, you know, being, and we don't want to abort it. And it's in response to all the data, the negative data that's been coming out about abortions and about late-term abortions and about what, you know, doctors have been doing to those that even are born alive. And while that disgusts most of us, apparently there are still people who would prefer to, you know, kill a, you know, a baby once it's been born. Even though it's been through the process of a botched attempt, you know, an abortion, they would still prefer to have that that child killed. So we're not talking logic anymore. You know, we're talking, you know, it's my body, and I want to do with it what I want, and you know, to hell with you. Basically, well,
there's no moral basis for that
decision. There is no moral basis.
There's a practical choice, me first kind of basis. Is what it is, and I agree with you. What a world we live in, and not like this is anything new. This has gone on for ages, and will to the very end, I think. But I still have it in my mind that somehow we could sit down with people who believe in evolution, and surely there are folks out there that we could just, even if we synthesize the two to see if there's any truth there, that would demonstrate something rather than. They reach a dead end because they can't go outside the box to admit.
Well, and that's
maybe the two positions are irreconcilable.
Yeah, and the box is materialism. Mm-hmm. Their box is humanism or secularism. So going outside the box, they say, foul, you can't go outside the box. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you guess what? You're talking about things that were created outside the box. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you got to go outside the box in order to understand it. And if you try to stay within the box, within the boundaries of the universe, within, for example, you just don't get there. Mm-hmm. So they artificially set up boundaries and rules, and to help. You know, explain their point of view. If you have to stay within the box, then everything must have come together by natural means, and therefore, I don't care what you say; it's got to happen naturally. And here's my explanation. Mm-hmm. So that's part of it. There are people who argue who used to present in a civil manner. And would debate creationists, for example, in a civil way. Those days are long gone. You can't have a civil conversation anymore because, you know, according to them, the argument has already been won. Mm-hmm. And where has the argument been won?
Well, you know, I think there's an open wound on the side of evolution and atheism, because even the mention of the name of Jesus incites rabid opposition. You can talk about Muhammad, you can talk about Buddha or Confucius or Hinduism, other major religions, but the moment Jesus' names come up, people take sides and pick up stones.
Well, and it's interesting, Jesus warned us of that. He said, you know, I've had tribulation, and guess what? In your lifetime, mm-hmm. you will have tribulation. Mm-hmm. You know, they hate you because they hated me first.
Well, I think it's a testament. It's an explanation of what's in their hearts. And but the good fight continues, and we're grateful for your input again. As always, Dr. Don Clark. Again, a biochemist, member of the board of Creation Moments. I'd recommend you pay a visit to their website, creationmoments.org. Org or com, all of a sudden, I've forgotten. Which is it, Doc?
It's actually both. We have both domains, so you can. But I think the one that will get you there faster is the .com.
Mm-hmm. So creationmoments.com. If you're interested in matters of evolution and creation and science versus faith, there's a wealth of information there for you. A lot of good material for your church and small groups at creationmoments.com. Don Clark from Garden Valley, Texas. How grow the grapes?
they are growing, and we continue to have a lot of work. So
you're getting some. Now, he raised. I should explain to you, for those of you who don't know, Dr. Don is raising grapes, and he's entering into the wine business here. Are you getting the heat that the rest of the Southwest is getting? Has that reached you yet?
Well, last week we had 105 degree weather.
That counts.
And
yeah,
it was difficult working outside all day. Mm-hmm. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. Yesterday was a very pleasant day, and I think it only got up to like 92 or 93.
Oh.
Today is supposed to be even better, with only getting up to like 89.
Okay.
But the heat will go back up, and the grapes really grow. The grape vines regrow with the heat. Now, supposedly they don't grow when the temperature gets up above 95.
Okay. Well, stress is good for them, right? Isn't it? Doesn't this count as stress?
Well, it is, and I haven't watered them yet this year. So some vines are showing signs of dehydration. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I have to selectively water some without doing the others. But yeah, we should, in a couple of weeks, we should have our first harvest.
Okay.
And well, so it'll be a busy day that day when we finally go to pick them.
Well, we wish you well, and exciting too. Dr. Don Clark, thanks so much. Appreciate having you along, and we'll chat with you again next week, okay?
Very good. See you later.
Good evening, Don. Thank you.
Judy Martin Hess continues the music on A Broken Road Radio Monday. Good morning to you, and welcome.